Tacky Talk time again. State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy is joining us for another podcast episode. Hi, Tacky.
Hey, good morning, Joe. Good to see you again on a bright and sunny Thursday.
Yes, we've made it through the first snowstorm and Arctic blast.
Well, my back hasn't given out yet, so it wasn't too bad, I suppose. But I will admit, as you age, you can feel the chill in your bones a little more than you used to.
This is so true. The older you get, and I've been saying this now, is if I never see snow again for as long as I live, it'll be too soon. And I truly mean that.
Well, hopefully people will be safe. There's a few more storm fronts coming this weekend into Martin Luther King Day on Monday. So, everyone just be careful out there. I know things are kind of still challenging overall for all of us. But now we have to consider weather events, and hopefully people do not do the bread egg run as we've seen in the past, because it's now pretty getting hard to get bread and eggs and milk and such at the moment because of the large number of supply chain issues.
I know we really seem to be taking some steps backwards recently, unfortunately, with the whole pandemic situation. We're back to, mask wearing and virtual things and supply issues. It's a little disconcerting for a lot of folks, I'm sure.
No, I agree with you. I mean, I'm in the same boat as everyone else regarding your emotional states and my emotional states associated with the pandemic and all the other things around us regarding increased prices, whether it be the food market or energy prices at home. As most of you who are working from home, well, not most of us, but a lot of us are working from home, you're actually paying high electric bills because you are working from home. It's actually employers with big office buildings are probably saving some money by having those offices empty, even though they're paying rent on an empty office space. So, I fully recognize that there is more incurred costs from working from home, particularly when the season's very cold or very hot.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was speaking to Rania Kibbucci at the Mass Hire Career Center here earlier this week about the unemployment rate, which is going down. It's pretty low. It's almost pre-pandemic levels. But he cautioned that a lot of that is people just leaving the workforce altogether, and he's probably right.
Yeah, the so-called mass resignations is going out there. I do understand that people talk about expanded safety net benefits, particularly unemployment, have been driving people, keeping from getting back to the workforce. But those expanded benefits end in September.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, you can't use that as the reasoning anymore. It is, as you pointed out, people making career changes and life changes because of this pandemic. So some folks, again, some folks are looking at their pension and retirement funds, they've had a boomer year last year, the stock market and your 401ks and other savings, that thinking, it's a good time to cash out, downsize their home because real estate prices are high, and make plans for the next step in their lives. And other folks, particularly front-facing retail folks, are thinking, maybe I should look at a change. And we all know that a lot of front-facing work can be very backbreaking, whether it be stocking shelves or waiting tables. I mean, I am not oblivious to that fact. It is backbreaking work for folks, and people don't get younger, right? I mean, the work does get harder. But normally you see in a conventional recession, like in 08 and 03, and back into saving the loan issues back in the early 90s, people take an opportunity to change careers during recessions because of the huge economic impact and layoffs. And people often go back to school as well. And nowadays, there's online learning opportunities that create some more convenience for folks who may be still working some level of front-facing retail, but also a chance to get an associate's or a certificate or a different type of licensing to change careers. Because online learning has made a degree of convenience for that.
Yep.
So there is not surprising. People are really changing jobs around as unemployment rate goes down. Wages have gone up at the lower end of the wage scale. To try to compete, to attract workers. But I was actually looking at median household income for the last year, and it's actually down from the year prior. What unemployment rate was still high. People were unemployment. Unemployment does not replace your previous salary.
Sure, yeah.
And the full impact of salary increases for lower-end wages has not been fully seen. So it'll be interesting to see if 2022 results in a stagnant lower or higher medium household income, but we're going to have to wait to see how it plays out.
Yeah, the minimum wage in Massachusetts, I know, went up at the first of the year. I think it was $14.25 now. I was surprised to see the federal minimum wage is still like $7.25 an hour. They're like way behind the times.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the federal government has implemented for their contractors, as part of the contracts, a higher minimum wage of $15 an hour. But they have not changed the national law, which is that would be the minimum standard for decades at this point.
Right.
And many states have stuck to the federal wage, but higher cost of living states have gone to a higher minimum wage. In some cases, cities like Seattle, for example, if I remember correctly, has a different minimum wage from the state's minimum wage. It is very commonplace to maintain that low minimum wage, but you know, the inflationary prices does nothing for a minimum wage, which is stagnant. It's not tied to any kind of economic increases. And of course, there's a ripple effect on businesses and consumers and you at home on the increased prices of literally everything and the ripple effect it has on all of us. So it's ironic because you got this kind of weird problem with your workers' wages can't go up. They can't buy stuff. They can't live. We got a problem. And then the businesses can't get people to buy their stuff because the wage is too low. It's really kind of a vicious cycle.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think you'll see, or do you think the state should in the future invest more in workforce training for, you know, new positions, new careers?
I am a big advocate for that. I mean, I continue to be a very strong advocate for vocational education. I think our community colleges in particular are most well positioned to look into where there's deficits in the workforce and switch gears to doing that. UMass system can actually do that on their own in many ways. And obviously, you know, I would support more funding for those specific programs if they do a strategic change. And Quincy College is another example of a place that can strategically change as needed with the changing workforce, especially now to have bachelor degrees is something they now offer. Try to get, you know, affordable education the best you can. I know that it's still not cheap in Massachusetts by any stretch, but I mean, it does create better career opportunities in the long term. And, you know, I keep saying over again, healthcare and biotech, two places that continue to have a degree of workforce shortage. And even places like auto body shops, mechanics, windshield replacement, again, workforce shortages in locales. And you know, I've heard from the towing industries as well as, heavy machinery industries where people need commercial driver's license and special training license to drive large vehicles. There's a shortage there. And they're also doing wage competition to attract talent to those businesses. So there are opportunities for folks who are looking for new skill sets out there. And it could be as simple as getting your training for a commercial driver's license.
Yeah, could lead to a whole new career, and obviously depending on, you know, what you want to do. Some folks would find that attractive to kind of be their own boss. Others want something more structured, with an office position. I guess that's the silver lining in all of this, is there are opportunities.
Yeah, and I always consider finding a new opportunity for better wages. And sometimes maybe better hours or not, it depends on your life situation, as an opportunity to make one stepping stone to perhaps another stepping stone down the road in your career. So, there's a shortage of a number of jobs during this pandemic that you may be able to fill that role if you so desire, but also use that as an opportunity to make a couple extra dollars given the wage competition to look at, you know, where you want to go next from there. Mm-hmm. So that's the way I kind of look at it as well.
Yeah. Do you think it's an opportunity too for entrepreneurs who want to start new businesses?
Yeah, I think online businesses continue to be a trend, has been a trend for many, many years now. So it's not new. As people try to do new types of service and businesses, I do think one of the big challenges right now is that you want to start a brick and mortar business. As we've seen in Quincy, there's a series of new restaurants that are pending opening. I see opening soon for a long time. I mean, those are the ones going to be very challenged right now, just because of the nature of the pandemic and getting people to come to your business, but also the price of lumber, as we know, has been very high. We know that the cost of contracting work is very high to do any kind of home or business contracting. So there are those additional costs in opening more brick and mortar style businesses out there. And I would expect to see the word opening soon to be longer as these type of workforce prices have been higher and the shortage of certain types of construction supplies.
Yeah, or if you can even find, you know, somebody to do the work, because there's a shortage there too. So it's going to be interesting 2022. It's going to take a while to flesh out, I think.
Agreed. We just have to get through the next two or so weeks as we try to reach the peak of Omicron and then go back down the other side of the peak and see what how the common cold is going to try to kill us next. As sad as that may sound, this is the common cold mutating with its bigger, uglier, or younger cousin, as I like to put it, because it's a newer generation.
Yeah.
But I always tell folks there's a reason why this is tough is because we're fighting a relative to common cold virus. And that's been with us forever as people. And there's a reason why we've never really kind of beat it easily because it just keeps changing us so quickly. I mean, everybody's got a cold watching this at some point.
It's really a chameleon of a virus for sure.
Yeah. And it got it. And the science is trying to keep up with it all. I think there's an unrealistic expectation of two things. People think this is a stagnant issue, meaning what you know from a year ago is going to be the same as you know now. Well, that's a myth. And secondly, it is a learn-as-you-go situation. It's frustrating, folks, because we like to have some definitive in our lives. All of us want to have some stability and knowledge of what's coming next. But we're dealing with a situation where every day we're learning something new. And again, as I talked about last time, the media has a hard time trying to keep up with this. And CDC's mixed messaging has not helped. The lack of consistent communication of a message has not helped, as well as the patchwork healthcare approaches in each community, whether you're wearing masks, vaccine verification, access to public spaces. Right now we have the school closure issues is inconsistent here as well as the entire country regarding COVID spread in schools. I have a friend who told me that in the class of 21 in Boston, 21 kids in a class in elementary, they're down to 7 kids out of 21 that is still not infected. There is a point here where it's hard for the news to explain the real impact on families because the families, are so dispersed in their places. They all seen the impact individually.
Yeah,
it's tough.
What do you think about the new governor's announcement about the digital vaccination code, I guess, or QR code that you can get on your devices?
Well, I'm going to tell you that some of you probably tried it and found that the information is not accurate. I've heard that from people already.
Okay.
Again, this is the problem with this type of technology rollout is they're trying to get it out. But they haven't let it be fully vetted before release. You saw that with the initial rollout of the scheduling for vaccines last year, which was a complete disaster. We've seen that with we can't really blame it for this one, but the unemployment system crashed because, again, it was not designed for 14% unemployment in 7 days.
Right.
So I can't really fault that one. But, I'm with Atrius Healthcare, Harvard Vanguard, and already have a QR code and a display on my phone, which cannot be screenshotted, as I found out, to show anyone who wants to see my vaccination status by phone. Of course, you can always make a photocopy and put it in your wallet or your other pocket or whatever. And obviously do not carry your actual vaccine card because it's been discovered. Replacing it's kind of hard.
Yeah.
Quite a few steps involved. So, it's great that, they want to put in this kind of universal system so you can get your entire vaccination history in one spot. But check with your healthcare provider. You might already be able to do this through the local apps. A lot of hospitals, a lot of larger doctor groups does have their own online portals and does have apps. And you should take a look at that because I think people have been crying against vaccine passports. I get raging emails from folks, feeling like it's a violation of all kinds of, you name it, they say it kind of circumstance. You actually could probably contact your own healthcare provider and say, hey, you guys have an app. How do you use it? I'm going to provide my vaccination information easily. Because people know I say over and over again, I'm sick a lot. But one of the funny things is now when you travel with this app, since it has your medication and most recent medical records, you know, God forbid you get sick in another state or in a locale, you can bring up your entire medical history on your phone and provide it to your doctor on site. In case this concerns about mixed medication, concerns about what your current treatment is, you can get see your last blood work done before they start the next set of blood work, so they have comparisons from prior. I mean, technology on these little guys here, if you want to use it properly, you know, it can be a lifesaver.
Yeah, it's so interesting because, as you say, all this information, all this data has already been available, you know, to private companies, private insurers, private healthcare providers, you name it. But when the government says they want it, then people get antsy. There's just this distrust, I think, of government having information.
Well, I mean, we distrust Facebook and Google, but people still won't get off Facebook and Google and Twitter, which I find peculiar. It's like, you know, you don't trust these systems, but you keep using it over and over again, feeding your information. And it's the guy that worked on some level of data privacy a couple of years back when we did an upgrade to our data privacy, consumer protection stuff, and holding more accountability to people who hold our data. You know, people still talk about it. And it's funny things, they're using social media to talk about how much they hate social media. It's like you're feeding the animal. And one of the problems of doing that, of course, is that you get targeted advertising, targeted feeds that only appeal to your sensibilities. And I think more so than ever is we're home now, people have time to do work at home and surf the web. It's a monster feeding the monster what it wants. And somebody would be like, you know, looking at this like, oh, no, that's not the case. I'm open-minded. You know, I look at the social media feeds. I mean, there's nothing that's not biased. I'm like, no, they don't make money on you being unbiased. They only make money if you are biased.
Right.
It's the same behavior. You look at the sidebar about all your shopping habits because, you know, Facebook sold it, a good bought it or sold it from someplace to feed you various ads. And even on watching online streaming, you know, on Hulu, I was joking to people online. It was like watching my shows and I'm getting these very interesting targeted ads regarding my sexual health, my choice of underwear, my shaving needs. Obviously, a lot of advertising, like 90%, was targeted towards a male audience in my age bracket that may have a series of conditions and needs that are different from someone in their 20s or someone in their 60s.
They know a lot. They know who you are. They know what you like. They know when you watch, what you like to watch. Oh, yeah, they know.
Yeah, and most people don't think about this stuff when they watch it because, you know, it's a commercial. But obviously, I pay far, far too much attention. And, you know, those who know, I do have my acting card, my Screen Actors Guild card. I did go to acting classes. I did get trained somewhat regarding media attention and watching magazines and commercials and know what to look for. Because it's actually helpful in media work if you actually watch advertising and read advertising to understand how the marketing system works and you can see a pattern develop. So I do pay some attention. Not to say I'm unbiased would be wrong. I have biases like everybody else, but I'm very conscientious of what I'm watching. And, you know, I recommend people do as well. You know, just be aware that everything you do online and now what you're watching streaming services with commercials, if they have a streaming service or commercials, is targeting you. I mean, I'm watching a show last night and they were showing commercials of the show I'm watching because they know I have a desire to watch similar type content.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you watch a commercial about a show you're watching? I mean, you know, on the big three, ABC, CBS, NBC is what most of us grew up on. Yeah. You do not show a commercial about a show that you're watching. That defeats the point of the commercial and wastes a time slot on something else to be making money for you in that commercial time slot.
Right, exactly, yeah. Time is precious. Time literally is money in that situation, yeah.
Precisely. So in this case, it was Hulu. And I'm kind of like, now literally, they just spent 30 seconds on something they're actually watching. That could have been, if this was more the conventional old big three, they would, you know, that's lost revenue.
Yep. That's right. That's all they have to sell is their time. So, you know, every second has to count.
So clearly the computer algorithm is faulty because they just lost the company some money.
Right. Yep. Interesting. So interesting the way this all works. You know, if you stop and think about it and actually, like you say, be aware of it, you'll notice how they're kind of, you know, manipulating you and steering you.
No, I actually agree with that. And nothing has done it more than this pandemic has made it very apparent exactly how much. I mean, you know, we can talk about the Trump years in politics and Obama years in politics, but you know, now we're in a situation where healthcare has been politicized in a whole different way. Mm-hmm. Our safety has been politicized in a whole different way. People feel the need to pick and choose the facts. And suddenly everybody's a doctor, everybody's an epidemiologist, everybody suddenly knows healthcare because it's my body and I know best. Well, that's great, but this ain't about you. This is about us. And I've said this over and over again. If your mentality is all about you and you come first, that's fine. But if you want to take responsibility for you and what happens to the rest of us, they will not answer that question.
Right. New year and a new law supposed to go into effect, Tacky, as you're well aware, the right to repair law.
Yep. Right to repair was approved by the voters in the last election cycle in 2020 election cycle. And the law has been suspended by the Attorney General pending a federal court case going on, which the judge has delayed issuing a opinion, actually reopened evidence reopened evidence for the first time in this case, and still is pending a decision. So my committee oversees the car right to repair issue, has done so for the last dozen years. I've only chaired this since 2017. And the committee's in a bit of a holding pattern because you shouldn't really make new laws till you know what the court is going to do. Because if you do a new law, they have to go back and change the law again to do what the court says.
Right.
This happened before. And it makes you look stupid, just letting y'all know. I prefer not to look more foolish than I have to most days.
Okay, fair enough.
So we've had some bills before us to try to change the law around a little bit regarding access to telemetrics. Accessing certain types of vehicles, trying to exempt certain types of vehicles and the such. So, again, the law's suspended by the Attorney General in enforcement because it's not enforced, it's essentially suspended. So for those who need a refresher, the right to repair law was approved by the voters overwhelmingly to allow third-party repair shops, you know, the non-dealer repair shops, to access the telemetry data. And you're asking, what's your telemetry data? Your telemetry data is everything in your car, from what radio stations to channel, if your seatbelt's being used, the speed of your car, and your GPS, and anything your phone's connected to, including your contact information. Now, it's a very broad term, telemetrics. Now, the law talks about the fact that you're supposed to only access your repair data, but they can already access repair data currently without accessing telemetric data. Hmm. They already have the equipment and machinery. There's also nothing in the law that prevents them from reselling your data if they've acquired information from your car, nor does any privacy protections for you on a third-party repair shop. So if any third-party repair shop or any repair shop tells you they want access to telemetric data, yeah, you should really just flat out say no. Because there's no criminal, no civil penalties for any of these repair shops to get the information, do what they want with it.
Oh, do you have the option to do that?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, it's actually kind of funny. The repair shop has right to access, and the repair shop can actually give someone else the right to access too.
Oh, so they have more rights than the car owner does.
Yeah, there's a little funky spot in that bill that people didn't spot. That basically allows assignment of right.
Interesting. Okay. So you really have to trust your repair shop.
Yeah. And trust me, people want to make money and, people want to be able to sell stuff to you. Some of you may not notice, whether it be on your phone or your car-based GPS, that, it downloads data on a regular basis from the deal, from the manufacturer. Actually, it provides information on things like gas stations.
Yeah.
So what's to prevent, there's nothing to prevent in the law from any repair shop from downloading data onto your telemetrics about things like go to this food joint, for example, and they've been selling their ability to do so. And you're like, well, that's kind of high-end technology. I'm like, well, guess what? People can figure that out if we haven't learned so far that trust me, some will figure it out.
Interesting. And these repair shops, I'm sure, are being solicited for that information because then they could make some money off it.
Yeah, if the law goes into effect, it'll be within 5 years that particularly the bigger repair shops like the Sullivan Tires, which is not a mom and dad store by any stretch, would be in a better position than your corner small business to be able to sell that information and practically profit off of you. And then people will get, there are unscrupulous people or people think it's harmless to do certain things, but it's not. And you would never know. That's the beauty of the right to repair bill. Consumer will never know exactly what happened. There's no disclosure requirement. They don't have to tell you.
So who's, is it the manufacturers that they're suing? They want to stop this?
Yes, the manufacturers of cars are looking to stop this law going into effect. One of the major reasons is because it only is in Massachusetts, even though we are a high income state and we're a pretty powerful market at 7 million people. They would have to redesign their cars specifically for the state of Massachusetts. They have to redo the entire software system for one state.
Oh, okay. So it costs them money, so they don't want to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's also confusing because now you got to do customizations on the software system, and one of it's a web portal where requires everyone to go to a single portal so people can get your telemetric data on the internet. Think about that one. You want your telemetric data sitting on a website somewhere?
No.
Yeah.
Especially not GPS and contact information data. Yeah.
Yeah. Domestic violence organizations have a serious concern about domestic GPS data being available. We are aware through my committee work on domestic violence, believe it, actually do some domestic violence awareness through my committee, that people will stalk. Abusers will stalk. Abusers will follow their victims. And, this provides a new avenue for someone to do it, particularly you got a buddy at a repair shop and doesn't know your situation at home. We have no idea what's going on at home. People ask what seemed to be innocent information, but it turns out to be malicious.
Okay. So that's why it's not in effect yet.
Yeah, the lawsuit by the manufacturers also argues it's an interstate issue. It's a federal issue because of the Commerce Clause. Cars go on the state lines. People can buy these cars in Rhode Island, bring them to Massachusetts. Those cars in Rhode Island would not be compliant with state law. They have to redo the entire car so they can bring them from Rhode Island to Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty involved. There's a series of federal arguments out there. I'm just kind of waiting out as committee chair, waiting for some legal guidance. That's all.
Okay. All righty. What is going on Beacon Hill these days, Jackie?
No, it's quiet right now, to be perfectly honest. So we went through a very swift opening ceremonial session at the beginning of the month. Joint Route 10 is February 2nd, Groundhog's Day. Seems like every day is Groundhog's Day. And committee chairs are moving very rapidly, getting hearings done and executive sessions going and polling going with the membership to move bills forward. Speaker's office is very interested in committee chair's progress. Committee chair meetings are happening this week, I think, into next month. So speaker can set his priorities going into spring and fall. I mean, fall, spring and summer. I'm hoping for fall already, as you can tell.
Yes.
Obviously, you always talk about the budget because the budget process is so long. Governor's budget's coming out. Governor's state and state's coming out this month. Ways and Means meetings are going to start with membership starting in February. Most likely, Valentine's Day, moving to St. Patrick's is when we have a lot of Ways and Means meetings.
Okay.
I'm starting to prep my request. And we still got the ARPA money, but the federal ARPA money infrastructure that's still pending. We're probably going to debate that also coming up in March through June, somewhere in that time frame. As State House News reported this week, the windmill bill has been a priority for the speaker. He wants to expand wind power big time in Massachusetts as part of renewable energy portfolio. And we hope to get some more information soon on the details on what Telecom Utilities and Energy Chair is proposing on how to improve windmill construction, not necessarily in Massachusetts, but in basically Block Island, off Rhode Island, for us to buy more renewable power.
I thought the ARPA bill was all done, Jackie.
We did everything but roads and bridges.
Oh, okay.
So we spent just about half-ish, give or take. So the other half-ish is all roads and bridge money. So you can bet that I'm going to be chasing some of that for some city-related road projects in the district, as well as the entire delegation. So the question really becomes, I know it's a couple of $1 billion. Everyone says it's a lot of money. But, you know, it vanishes pretty quickly. You know,
yes.
If you start $5 and $10 and $20 million at a time, depending on the size of the project. So it'll be a negotiation. And, you know, my attitude is get something off the loaf as opposed to nothing off the loaf. So we'll be in there fighting to try to get as much as we can.
Okay, yeah, it seems to be one of the major complaints about city services is the condition of the roads.
Well, I'll also remind folks, the city of Quincy has like $46 million or something like that of ARPA money, which they have almost free rein to use, as well as the county government has quite a bit of ARPA money too, which I still think they haven't decided how to get their disbursements. And you throw in the fact that, you know, the school systems could use better ventilation systems. We all discovered now they receive federal assistance in the prior year directly also to get money for the school systems to be COVID ready. That money was distributed through the previous stimulus bill. I think there's more like four of them from the feds now.
I think that's right, yeah.
They all like meld in your brain after a while.
It's true.
But the city has, you know, received a lot of money from the federal government to address COVID needs. And, you know, as taxpayers, you know, watching this, you know, you should have your right to ask your city councilors and your mayor, Mayor Koch and your individual counselors, exactly what that money has been spent on. You know, it's not a fair question to ask.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I know some of it was spent on buying the Monroe building. Another portion was spent buying some land down off Southern Artery around the Southern Tide Mill area. I don't know what else, but I'm sure there's others too.
Sure. And, but again, I mean, you know, the schools could use better ventilation, and particularly older schools. And you have, other road and bridge projects that are pending out there. And even though, you know, there's talk about upgrading City Hall, I mean, you could create more COVID-ready circumstances. And, I've also had public employee ask me about early retirement and ask me about, COVID pandemic pay. And the city government can also use a portion of their money for COVID pandemic pay. So I also can use it for grants to help float along restaurants and other small local retail businesses. They can use the information for COVID outreach. They can use it to buy test kits for the schools, for public employees, PPE. I mean, they're very broad use of that money. I love the fact they keep looking at us like, you know, give us more. But, you know, we're fully aware how much our cities and towns got. Trust me, every legislator I talk to know exactly how much money the community got. And I can't tell you how to spend it because I'm just a resident of the city, like everyone else in this call. But, you know, hey, it's the responsibility of every resident to ask their city government, as same as to ask the state government, where's the beef, right?
Very good, Jackie. Yes. Folks of our generation know that saying for sure. Yeah.
Way back machine now, right? that's not lost in the state government. Trust me, every legislator looks at their municipal governments. We know how much you all got. And again, I'm just another resident like you all. You guys can decide on this call how you guys want to, you know, ask your municipal officials on how they're spending $46 plus tens of million dollars of, you know, federal assistance money targeted towards things like schools and other stuff. And where's the money gone?
Yep. Actually, we're recording this February 13th, I think. Is that right? Yeah, 13th. And
we're still in January. We're not in February yet.
Oh, January. Yes, I know. We're all trying to just rush through this time. I get through it.
Look, I'm like you. We just want to get through this tomorrow. Just get through this quickly.
But the governor's here in Quincy today to open the new General's Bridge.
Well, it's good to see the bridge open. I'm not going much places. I think I pretty much said that multiple times at the moment. It'll be interesting to see how the traffic dynamic works on that bridge. I was under the false impression apparently it's going to be a one-way off Bergen onto what used to be the parking way. Dunford Road now is what it's called.
Yeah, so, Dunford Drive, yeah.
Drive, so I don't know how this is going to work until we actually try it. So I eventually have to go get food and stuff to live. So maybe I'll give it a try and see how it works. I have no idea how this traffic pattern is going to go.
Yeah, it's all brand new, so nobody really does. It goes over the MBTA tracks. I think the idea is to bring people right to the center of downtown, to the new parking garage there, and then patronize the businesses, certainly, in the area.
Yeah, and I saw in the Patriot Ledger that Fox Rocks is no longer going to build a 22-story building. They withdrew the proposal, and they're going to do more of a three-ish, some much smaller height complex. We'll have a parking garage and some retail and commercial businesses there. So maybe the traffic pattern will be more apparent, as you pointed out, when a new development's there. But I don't know if this bridge was meant to do 22-story building or a 2 or 3-story building. I don't know, actually. I mean, as you can tell, I'm kind of unclear until we see it in action, see how it works. A lot of that project was, again, also state money.
Yes.
But the city applied and got as part of the over downtown infrastructure plan.
That's
so
right.
You got a few options now. You could coming north down in Bergen, you can cross over at the Paul Howard Bridge. You got this General's Bridge, and we can go to the very end of Grand Street, bang a right, like we've done pretty much most of our lives because we didn't have the other bridges. And then go down Hancock Street that direction. I don't know. Let's see how it goes. I'm going to have to try it myself.
Yep. Okay. Something new to play with here in the city.
Oh, new adventure is a good adventure, it feels like these days.
Yeah. Well, at least it's something you can do social distancing in your car by yourself.
Well, those are my entertainment through most of the height of the pandemic was going through the car wash. That was kind of my entertainment. I mean, you just crack the window, throw the money out, close the window, and just kind of enjoy your 1 minute ride through the car wash.
Yeah, the cleanest car in the neighborhood. You go to the car wash every day just to get out.
Yeah, I know. Things to entertain yourself with.
So, well, we should, maybe talk a little bit about local things that are maybe happening or maybe not happening. It's Lunar New Year is coming up soon. Other community groups usually have things around Valentine's Day. I don't know what's going to be happening this year.
A lot of stuff been postponed or not happening still. There's a lot of uncertainty going on about being in big crowds. The city, again, the few times I get to things like the market and, obviously I get gas every so often. I don't drive as much as I used to. But obviously I still have to get errands done. And, people, I have to say, 85%, 80%, close to 90%, are mask wearing folks. I mean, I, commend the city on just taking responsibility for yourself and protect others to wear a mask and, continue to sanitize. But, large crowded areas, proximity and time is increasing your odds of disease. Even with a mask on, air does escape on the edges, but everyone's wearing a mask, you reduce greatly your chance of infection, even in close contact. But the longer you're together, the higher the odds of getting sick. So Lunar New Year Festival is going virtual for the second year. It's normally an event that draws about 5,000 people plus, as I've attended many of these in the past.
And
Quincy Asian Resources is now switching gears. I do understand that North Quincy High School also has trying to do some Lunar New Year celebration education for their students as more diversity inclusion. I'm not sure how that's going to go. We're all aware of the infection rate in the school systems. A lot of the Chinese New Year events in Chinatown, a lot of banquets and dinners celebrating it with the various businesses and different family organizations have not occurred. They've all essentially been canceled at this stage or maybe postponed deep into the spring. I'm not sure what's going to happen.
Right. That's a big financial hit, I'm sure.
Yeah, and the Vietnamese community has the Tet.
Yep.
I'm aware that I believe there's one at the World Trade Center in South Boston. Again, a giant complex, but unclear about whether they're going to be able to pull it off. And you also had my alumni, Boston College High School. And I'm not sure if they're I don't think you're going to be able to pull that off this year as well. And of course, it's too cold and the weather's too uncertain to try to shift these events to outdoor venues. And even neighborhood associations have all been tenuous on events, even outdoor events. They've sudden notice changes is becoming quite commonplace.
Yes.
I know none of us like to get these sudden changes in notice and plans, but, you know, there is a importance of trying to keep each other safe and trying to hold a neighborhood together. And MLK events another year. Again, my alumni, BC High, does have MLK events. They're not doing any really this year. I'm doing letting people know by email and statements from the school. Cities had on and off different types of MLK events over the years. Obviously, that's not going to happen this year. It's kind of a stay tuned situation. Any moment, things can change. And I remind again, folks, that if you have a local organization that you need to support and you wish to show their support, even though they can't hold a conventional fundraisers, you can spare a couple of dollars. Obviously, please do. Mm-hmm. You have to all decide, what important organizations are to you.
Right. Quarry is one of those. Certainly they are, very active in providing meals to folks, English language learning programs, all kinds of immigrant assistance programs. So that's certainly a worthy local group.
Yeah, and they're also looking to see if they can provide assistance to Afghan refugees as that influx starts coming into Massachusetts over the course of this year. Now it's 2022. So Afghanistan is in Asia. I think people tend to forget where it is in geography. And
it's part of the Asian continent. Yes, right. Yeah.
It is actually part of the Asian continent. So they need to, look at whether they can provide services to that population. And we'll wait and see what they come up with. But like all of us, learn as we go. And you never expected to have a large Afghan refugee population come in, but they are coming.
Mm-hmm. We talk a little bit about national politics, Jackie, and I think last time we talked, it was the Russia-Ukraine situation. Not much has changed since then, really.
No, there's ongoing conversations. I mean, the Russians staked out not a surprising argument that they don't want former Soviet bloc countries to join NATO. For those who follow European politics, no big surprise, over time, a lot of former Soviet bloc countries end up joining NATO. And many want to get into the EU's trading bloc. It is very smart economics for them to have free trade with part of the EU. The EU is a very wealthy area of the world. And if you're less strong economic region, the benefits of being part of a larger bloc in terms of things like healthcare and pension, education, travel access, free trade is a big boon for nation developing and wanting to grow strong economically. And NATO obviously provides that massive security umbrella against Russia. So obviously Europe and the US are like, no, we're not going to agree to that because we don't want to restrain any country's application to NATO. Whether NATO accepts your application is a whole different conversation, right?
Yes,
exactly. But you don't want to restrict someone's ability to apply. A country's ability to apply. And, Ukraine has gone not pro-Russia anymore. People may remember that when the Crimea event happened and Russia took it over, it was a pro-Russian president in Ukraine. It has now changed. It's amazing how invading a country has had the population turn on a president.
Imagine that when you have tanks rolling down Main Street, you kind of, put off by that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing how the population don't think it's cool that you thought it was okay to allow that to happen. Just say, and of course there's still skirmishes on the border of Ukraine and Russia wants to claim more territory and, they're trying to take advantage of some local ethnic divisions between the Ukraine government and some of the local folks. And that's going on as well. So it's going to be a tense situation and we'll wait to see how it goes. And, I do think that the Biden administration and the European allies, are taking the correct position. We've got to take a strong stance here and hold a line. Sanctions have already been done on Russia before. They're used to it at this stage, sadly. So, and they're not really part of really many free trading blocks. Right now, they're trying to see if they can get some kind of decent trading block with China. But they don't have great trading block access. So it's not like this is status quo. It's really going to come down to a showdown on whether or not they're going to test American and European resolve.
Exactly.
Maintain and keep a sovereign nation, and whether or not, you know, we want to provide security in that region from aggression. It's been a while since we've had a U.S. and European action inside their basic sphere. I mean, it's inside their zone.
Yep.
To maintain a security and status quo.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Hope it doesn't come to that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but you know, it could be China. They locked down 20 million people again. So
it just astounds me every time that happens. It's just unfathomable, you know, to understand just the logistics of how that works.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. You know, it's got to have a negative impact on your economy. Again, they're now become a commercial service economy, just like the U.S. They're moving away from manufacturing. They're becoming less and less a cheap manufacturing country. So, I mean, they're locking down these massive cities that provide groceries to drop on people's doors. I know it's all government-owned social media. It's government-owned state media. It's not a free press and all that. But, you know, it's interesting that people are now complaining about the treatment, you know, on how they're getting the food, and they're locked in for 3 weeks and mandatory testing. I mean, the complaints are showing up on state-owned social media, and the government's trying to respond. But the Beijing Olympics are 4 weeks and less away.
Yep.
No outside spectators, a quarantine period or arrival plus testing. And China is pretty much made the last place on the planet that's on a zero policy on COVID infections. They see one infection, they close everything to stop the spread. And Omicron's already in there. For a zero a tolerance country, in fact, Omicron got in, is not a good sign. And it'd be interesting if, you know, a band four people country is going to shift to, unfortunately, what everyone's going to at this point. We're going to have to figure out how to live with this in the long term and continue advancement of vaccinations and medical treatment, which is something that China really hasn't done. They haven't gone forward in advancement in medical treatment as well as new vaccine development. And this is where it gets kind of scary, where, you know, let's say they do continue zero tolerance. Maybe we get past Omicron. But, you know, I'm not saying Omicron's going to be gone all the time. I mean, it's not going to disappear overnight, but it's, you know, we've got to pass through this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, given the fact that their vaccinations hasn't caught up with the new variants, and that, you know, if Omicron sneaks in and, it, you know, we know it spreads in a 3-day doubling rate. So you got a, you know, 13 million person city. It moves like wildfire. You know, it is milder symptoms, but we have a higher hospitalization rate. And, you know, you look at that against 1.4 billion people, or even a city like Beijing that's 22 million, you know, you still got about 10 to 15%, you know, high serious illness, 10 to 15% zone. That means the hospital is going to get overrun in a heartbeat. Yeah. And even if the death rate's only 1% or 0.5%, unless they drop from 2 to unless they get real generous here, go from a 2% death rate to 0.5%, you know, against 22 million people.
It's a lot of people still. Yeah.
It's a lot of people. And we saw that in New York during the initial COVID virus of a city of just under 9 million people. I remember there were mass graves. People seem to forgot that already. Those big construction machines dropping mass graves as if we're in South America.
Mm-hmm.
You can't unsee once you see that in the news. And it's like, you know, we saw the same thing in South American countries. You can't unsee that as soon as you see it on the news. But, you know, people, you know, memories are a little bit short, I guess.
Yeah. Or, you know, trying to block out trauma, I think, is part of our survival.
Yeah. Unfortunately, but some of this trauma is the reason we have survival. Mm-hmm. It reminds you we shouldn't be doing this. So China is actually a very interesting situation where they're trying to shield themselves from the rest of the world, taking what we consider extreme measures to stop the spread. But they do have a very different hospital system. And they do have a very different approach on how to manage this. But at some point, they got to open up people to visit again and let people out of the country to visit somewhere else. And as they approach the next national conference this fall and winter, Xi Jinping is looking for his lifetime presidency, for lack of a better term, because he goes third term, 5-year term. And COVID is a huge platform for him to, you know, justify another 5-year term with his Congress and the people. So they're not elected by Chinese president is not elected by the public. It's elected by the Congress.
Right.
And as we've seen, he's extremely powerful. So, you know, it's a crucial for him to have a successful Beijing Olympics to provide a positive face to Raul, a Chinese success story on a global stage. It'll be interesting if athletes will make political statements from the podium, if they are going to have a podium at all. I have no idea what's going to happen. There'll be no spectators allowed. So
it can be. And the media is going to be under strict control. So, yeah.
Yeah, national, international media is going to be very strict control. You should be seeing stories about press zones at some point, where they're no longer allowed to roam the streets or interview anybody they want, and it's going to be very contained. And I expect you're going to see every media outlet, doesn't matter where you're on the political spectrum, you know, going to talk about you know, media restriction access in the Beijing Olympics. It'd be interesting to see how it goes. It's going to be very different from the 08 Summer Olympics. This is a totally different political situation, geopolitical situation, and of course, COVID has, you know, pushed on top of that too.
All right. Until next time, Tacky, reach out to you.
Yeah, 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. At this point, hopefully I memorized phone number, repeating it enough times. Tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. I'm still receiving a lot of testimony, but it's not as bad as it was 2 weeks ago when my email box was blowing up. And, you know, obviously I got my Facebook page, State Representative Tacky Chan. It is a public page. There is no sign-up requirement. You could be anybody and just go on like a regular website. Actually, I think the last posting we had was regarding civil service exams for police officers is up. So if you're interested in something like that, you know, visit the Facebook page you know, click the links there to get to the application. And obviously I have a Twitter account at Tacky Chan, and tackychan.org is more of a resource page for people to find some phone numbers as well as calling my office directly. So there's plenty of ways to do this, including, you know, watching me and Joe here on QA TV once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks, depending on the schedule we have. And, you know, we just talk about whatever sometimes.
Yeah, we talk about Tacky's hair and his broken car and his, you know, menu choices. maybe some substantive issues are in there too.
Well, I guess through this almost 2 year process. I think we started this April in 2020. I think people know a little more about what I do on a daily life than they ever had before.
And they certainly know about all your tassels behind you from all your degrees.
Yeah, my pine cone tree and my brother and I tassels from high school to graduate schools. So, you know, a small family tradition behind us, and that's been kind of the mainstay plus part of the dish cabinet, little wooden piece on this side, and sometimes you catch a light switch on the other side.
I think we had a cameo appearance from your mom in one of these. I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, you can interview her if you want. I mean, I think people enjoy that more than seeing me.
Oh, then we get the real story of Tacky. good to talk to you as always. Appreciate it, Tacky.
Good to talk to you, Joe, and I'll see you in a week's time.